Chapter 13. Invitation to a Lair. Kyrus became a mass of thought, bodiless in the deep ether. His frequent trips across Cadrus had accustomed his eyes to what was no longer a weird, alien landscape. The ether had patterns and habits that were becoming plain for him to see. To flee Dinku Appa, he had tried the navigator's way, plotting a heading and figuring on a distance. If he was inaccurate, he was not worried about missing the landmass upon which Acardia and Herlin rested. Close was close enough. Now Kyrus ignored the heading he would need. He went up instead, to view his destination from afar before he ever left. Devoid of form to hold him back, there was no sensation of the vertical. He tried to latch on to some feeling of vertigo as the sources that dwelt close to the ground fell away. With no bodily sensation, neither stomach to clench nor head to lose blood, the sickened feeling could not take hold of him. The people in the streets, their animals, the paths they trod, and the wakes of ether left by their passing, all shone to Kyrus's ether vision. Hazy, muddied streets took form because of the trails of ether left by mortal traffic. The higher he went, the more of Cadran he could see. Cadrus was a huge blot on the landscape. Potawai Wood emerged as a haze of floral ether. To the north and east, the subtle blue shading of the ether hinted that it was not of animal origin. Island Point became a dollop to the west, and Pevet, Marmot, and Farfield came into relief as well. Kyrus had studied maps of Coria and the lands beyond the Aliani. The wider his field of vision grew, the more like the maps the world below became. Rivers, hills, and mountains were all but indistinguishable, but cities, forests, and even roads stood out plainly enough. Kyrus drifted along at altitudes that he doubted any airship captain would dare. The drift came at speeds that would tear sails to tatters and shake wooden hulls to splinters. From his frame of reference, though, he felt no faster than a lazing cloud. He paused to steel himself when he came to Magrin, facing the daunting task of setting off above the sea. The Cadrans were no great seafaring people. Their maps were a poor and suspect collection. He had seen the most excellent maps aboard the Fair Trader, though, and knew the layout of Tellurac by memory. It was time to test how well Vaedrus and Tellurac truly matched. Kyrus kept Coria within his sights as he ventured over the Aliani Sea, heading to the north and west. His fantastical velocity brought his discovery in moments. Acardia. Azat. The landmass looked like moth-eaten cloth. The barren, rocky countryside was stark and nearly invisible in the ether. The northern hemisphere of Vaedrus was approaching winter just as Cadrans looked forward to the onset of summer. The hardy evergreens still glowed, but where crops and deciduous plants grew, sources slept. The cities were not entirely where Kyrus had expected. Azat was scarcely on a foreign map, so jealously did its dwellers guard their privacy. History and chance had guided the demon-ruled kingdom along a different path than the one that Acardia had trodden. Where would a demon live? It would be impossible to reason out fully in his head. Kyrus decided to choose a place at random and find his way from there. There was a concentration of ether that was larger than the others, though only by degree. If the easternmost tip lay where Scar Harbor was in Tellurac, then Azat's largest city must have been near Golis, or perhaps a bit further upriver. Kyrus headed for it. The process of rising above Cadrus reversed itself. Kyrus's perspective narrowed as he descended, rendering the map-like view from 5 days' ride straight up to a more local panorama. Blurs came into focus, revealing streets and public buildings, homes, businesses, a seat of power. There was no doubt that some manner of wealth and influence was responsible for an island of sources in the middle of the city, surrounded by a barren area that promised others were not permitted within.
Maybe I should stop outside and seek an audience, rather than emerge inside.
Expected or not, there was probably some protocol against transferring into someone's palace refuge. The world of light snapped back around Kyrus like a cage. No longer was he free to move about at a whim.
he floated the short way down to the ground, having once again used Rashan's trick to avoid dragging chunks of the landscape wherever he went. The relative ease he felt in his source was reassuring. He had not used all the ether he had drawn for the trip, nor had he needed to draw more en route. Ether roiled within him, stored in case his welcome was not cordial. As Kyrus's thoughts turned to his immediate situation, he realized that he had emerged into the twilight hours of Azat. Though low in the sky, he had caught up to the sun in his journey. As he looked to the curious sight of what was about to become the second sunset he had seen that day, he heard cries from the natives. The words they spoke had a vague familiarity to them, but not enough that he could put a meaning to them. It was not Kadrin, even with a heavy accent, nor was it anything he knew from Telyarak, though the cadence of the words reminded him more of home. Booted feet clomped toward him in a run, drawing Kyrus's attention to a squad of city guardsmen, unarmored but carrying short, thick blades. They shouted to him, but it was more of the same incomprehensible language. Drat, I should have thought of some contingency plan for speaking with them. Do any of you speak Kadrin? Kyrus shouted. A bit of gentle telekinesis stopped the rushing guardsman mid-stride. He lifted them off the ground just far enough for their feet to dangle ineffectually, unable to gain traction on the cobblestones. He awaited an answer he could understand, but it seemed that he would not find his translator among the guardsmen. Indrietho enemakne ubtayo wanduzar proniduk, Kyrus chanted. The guards watched in misguided horror as he wove his fingers to form an unfamiliar variant of the shielding spell he so often used silently. It formed a dome around him, cutting him off entirely from the guards. Once safely encased with some space to hold them at bay, Kyrus slowly lowered the men to the ground and released his hold on them. The six guards approached, but knew well enough to be wary of strange magic. One among them, no doubt, of an amateur scientific persuasion, poked at the shielding spell with his sword. The shield hissed and sizzled, shortening the blade as quickly as it was presented. The guard drew back his sword, dropping it and jumping back when he realized it was dripping molten steel. The guards began a frenzied consultation that ended in two of them running off while the rest remained to watch over their guest. Kyrus had no idea what they thought of him, since he was watching a badly acted pantomime without a translator. When the two guards returned, they were accompanied by a blue-robed gentleman with a stern bearing. The newcomer barked several commands to which Kyrus could only shrug in reply. Kyrus forced himself to remain calm when the newcomer began to chant some sort of magic. He could tell by the flow of ether before the words even began that it was no threat to his shield, but the reflex to defend himself still goaded the back of his mind. A paltry bolt of ether splattered against Kyrus's shield. Kyrus crossed his arms, pursed his lips, and shook his head slowly. Not in a thousand winters, my friend. Try all you like. Find me someone who speaks Kadrin, Kyrus said once more. If a single word of his held meaning to the Azatians, they betrayed no sign. I am here to see Zizix. That got a response. The six guards and the Azatian sorcerer broke into a heated discussion, from which Kyrus picked out the name Zizix no fewer than four times. When they broke off their deliberations, the sorcerer took the lead in delivering their response. He used a great many wasted words, but ended his reply with Zizix. You can take me to Zizix? Kyrus asked. The sorcerer at least seemed to have gained some understanding of Kyrus's intent. He nodded slowly, keeping his eyes cautiously focused on Kyrus. He waved a hand back and forth in a sweeping motion. He wants me to drop my shielding spell? Kyrus snorted a laugh. Of course he does. Kyrus knew that he would get nowhere standing in the road under his spell until nightfall, which was fast approaching. With a shrug, he let his shield expire, sucking up much of the loosed ether as the construct fell apart. There was a ring in the ground of melted stone that marked where it had been. Though he supposed that he should not have been surprised, the sorcerer shouted a command and the guards rushed him. The shield had only kept them paces away, which someone thought was close enough to launch a surprise attack. Kyrus felt a tug in the ether as the sorcerer drew for a spell to support the guard's assault. A moment later, the sorcerer lay on the ground, drawing with all his might to keep his own source from being pulled clear out of him. The six guards hung upside down as Kyrus plucked the swords from their hands one by one. He gathered the swords together in midair and melted them into a ball, incinerating the wood and leather from the handles in the process. The molten steel he reformed roughly, making a staff more than head height. Kyrus took hold of it before it even cooled, letting his personal shield spell, which he had never allowed to expire, protect him from the ferocious heat. Ignoring the cries of the frightened guardsmen, Kyrus released his draw against the sorcerer's source and lifted him to eye level, grasping him by the collar with his free hand. "Zizix?" Kyrus asked, not bothering with any of these superfluous words that prevented their communication. As the sorcerer pointed off in the direction of the city's island in the ether, Kyrus looked into his eyes. For a moment he imagined that he could see Rashan's face reflected there, summoned by the sorcerer's fear. "What do they see when they look at me? The same madman that I see when I look at Rashan? I have done no real harm. Is fear harm enough, though?" Kyrus broke his gaze and shook his head. The guardsmen flipped over as they hung suspended, boots bottommost once more. Kyrus set them down and released them. The men wobbled on their feet as they fled. "Must have spun them over too quickly," Kyrus realized. That was the risk he took. His spells were so strong that he did not need to intend harm to cause it. He could as easily have snapped all their necks had he whipped them about carelessly. He let go of the sorcerer's collar. Kyrus held his staff out in the direction the sorcerer had indicated. He pointed first to the sorcerer, then down the line of the staff. "Zizix," Kyrus ordered. The sorcerer nodded.
"I hope my children have not vexed you too sorely,"
a voice boomed from across the chamber. Kyrus had finally managed to prevail upon one of the caste of Azatians, whose lot in life seemed to be keeping Zizix free of visitors. There was a formal audience chamber that the ruling council of Azat used, but they had eschewed it. That was for the puppet government's use, not the demons. Side passages and underground tunnels led to a more secluded venue, where the helpful bureaucrat had left Kyrus in some haste. "It seems you prefer not to be seen," Kyrus called out in reply. "Many still question your very existence." He looked about, but saw no one in the room with him. Columns and pedestals cluttered the place, showing off opulence of every variety and providing countless options for concealment. Ether vision was useless as well, since it was a demon he was searching for.
"I assure you I do,"
the voice came from above him. Kyrus turned to see a monster emerge from nothingness. It was at least as tall as any ogre Brannis had fought, with skin like leather and a head that was a nest of horns. Kyrus scrambled back and drew ether.
"Are you Zizix?" Kyrus asked.
Zizix straightened, pulling back away from Kyrus.
"I may not be much longer should your temper fail you. Forgive my theatrics. I have so few acquaintances that I fear I overthink my greetings."
Zizix spread his hands wide in a gesture of apology. Kyrus saw that the demon's fingers were little more than articulated claws.
"You were the one who extended an invitation, I believe," Kyrus said,
ceasing his draw but doing nothing to dissipate the ether he had taken.
"Indeed. I was led to believe by our mutual acquaintance that you two hold some common cause against an old adversary of mine. Curious, is it not, how he finds enemies so readily among his own people? The Magrin sorcerer's vitriol is easily understood. Yours less so, but I would not say that I am surprised," Zizix said.
The demon's smile showed fangs like carving knives.
"What quarrel do you have with Rashan?" Kyrus asked.
"If I am to trust you, I would know your motive."
Now, who said anything about trusting one another?" Zizix asked.
The demon gestured to a pair of chairs set off in a corner of the room, stalking off toward them and leaving Kyrus to follow or not as he chose. Kyrus followed.
"But I have no need to conceal my reasons for despising him. Rashan Solaran is a brute. He is a murderous machine of war and death. He has tried to reform himself and failed. By all reports I receive, his failure deepens by the day.
Is there no specific grievance you have? Kairos asked. It sounds like you are dancing around your real reason. Kairos studied the demon's face, his manner. It was all too alien to pick up any human mannerisms that would betray deception.
Bavatrain, Zizek said.
What does that mean?
Bavatrain is the immortal that Rashan killed. I could not properly call Bavatrain a friend, but he was no enemy of mine, and I had known him thousands of summers. When you have lived as long as I have, such ties to the ancient world are invaluable. The others felt the same way. I never lived among the immortals. I chose my children over their company, but I was welcomed among them. So was Rashan, once.
Did Rashan live long among them? Kairos asked.
Here is someone who knows where those missing years were spent.
By your measure, I suppose. He crawled to them from his battle with Lorimar, feverish with tainted ether he knew not how to rid himself of. How he found them, I know not, though I suspect he may have already known of their enclave.
Why was Rashan banished from them? Kairos asked. He felt as if he were conducting an interrogation, but Zizix had yet to take offense.
Many of the immortals come and go, spending long periods away from the company of others. What hobbies and fancies call them away, it is their own business if they choose to keep it to themselves. Bavatrain was well known for his restless spirit, often visiting Azat when he went abroad. On one such visit, he told me that he was on his way back to the others, intending that he would stay for some time. He confided that he was worried about his quarrels with Rashan. Immortals often carry grudges over hundreds of winters, but you see, they carry those grudges. Settling them is distasteful. It smacks of mortality. Bavatrain warned me that he would leave word should he ever again wander far away.
Let me guess, he wandered away without leaving word? Kairos asked. A rueful smile curled his lips.
Such a trap for Rashan to fall in. Someone saw his lie ahead of time.
Clearly you know Rashan's nature, or you would not have come this far to seek counsel in opposing him. Yes, Bavatrain disappeared. None could ever prove what had become of him, but I swore to Bavatrain's promise to me that should he go missing, it would mean that Rashan had settled their dispute in the fashion most pleasing to his wanton nature, Zizek said.
And so, that was why they banished Rashan? Kairos asked. It seems flimsy evidence. Did he protest his innocence? Kairos found his mouth growing dry. There was no refreshment at hand. He licked his lips and tried to ignore the distraction.
Of course. The murderous wretch feared we would overwhelm him in numbers and destroy him, Zizix explained. He cast enough doubt that banishment was his punishment instead. At Iliardra's insistence, they set a condition for his return. If he could live 10 winters and kill nothing, they would allow him back.
I was there when he failed. I had no idea at the time just what that meant. I was having enough trouble accepting the fact that it was really the Rashan Solaran who had returned.
Yes, and a wondrous return it has been, has it not?
Zizix threw back his head for a single, scoffing laugh. And now you want me to kill him, Kairos said. Assuming I am willing, what aid can you offer?
I must decide first if you are worth aiding. If you fail and Rashan deduces my involvement, it would break a truce we have had in place to keep him out of Azat and away from my children.
Am I not strong enough? Kairos asked. Am I not skilled enough, is that it? Do you question my will to see it through?
Strength only matters if you know how to use it. Push your hammer against a rock as hard as you like. You must swing the hammer to break it. Do you know how to wield a hammer? In battle with him, would you choose to flee instead? You arrived by transference spell. You might flee Rashan by the same means.
Zizix leaned closer, allowing Kairos to make out irises in the red upon red eyes.
What drives you to his destruction?
He led my best friend to his death. He has murdered my father, my uncle. He kills everything he touches. He concocts excuses,
but they are just paint over rotted wood. Sooner or later I will find some way into his ill graces, and it will be me on the end of his sword if I do not find some way to be rid of him first," Kyrus said. He stared back into those demonic eyes, the sort that storybooks mean when they call some creature demon. He did not see a monster, but rather human feeling in those eyes, less cold than Rashan's were. There was a desperate worry there. For all the hideous skin and fangs and claws, the eyes were human aside from their ominous coloration. "If you cannot help me, then tell me where to find the other immortals. Where is this enclave you mentioned? Iliardra has seen fit to lend indirect aid. I will confront her more directly about putting an end to her former love."
"Oh, so you do know her, then. What sort of aid has she given you?"
Zizek sat back in his chair, slouching as he awaited Kyrus's reply. The moment of human contact Kyrus had felt evaporated as the demon settled back into aloofness. She left two books. One was a book of prophecies that Rashan had written long ago, before his final battle with Lorimar. I have discovered that it was a journal of sorts, disguised as prophetic ranting. The other was the Peace of Talax, Kyrus said. He noticed a twinge in Zizek's expression when he spoke the name. But it was not given directly, and I have not yet seen it. I made a search of Cadrus for another copy, but the one from the Tower of Contemplation is the copy that is missing. I should have the copy I was meant to possess in a few days.
Was there anything of use in Rashan's journal? Zizek asked. I might be of some aid in interpreting it.
Perhaps. What does this mean? One vase, filling fast, spilling faster. To see another, no mirror may reflect it. Where to find its shadow? An absence, not a copy. Seek a way among the spirits. That is an entry that I think may be the key to figuring out
how he managed to become immortal.
Zizek finished the thought.
Yes, Kyrus admitted. How much have you puzzled out on your own? The demon asked.
Kyrus saw the fingers of one clawed hand clenching and unclenching. I'm not sure how to begin explaining this. I suppose I may as well just ask outright, since I can only imagine the crazed tales you must have heard in your...
I know about the other worlds. Get on with it, Zizek snapped. It is no great secret among us, Akkadian.
How do you...
Word has spread. Let us leave it at that. I might give you a dozen more reasons, but suffice it to say that you are also no great secret, Kyrus Hinterdale. Magic's more subtle than mine pry loose secrets wherever they may lie.
Kyrus shuddered. He swallowed to clear the lump that was growing in his throat. Well, there was a third book, written by an underling of a twin Rashan Solaran once had. He was a spy of sorts, but working for coin rather than a king. He moved information between worlds and made a fortune at it. Well, this underling wrote of the death of Rashan's twin. He received a visitor that day that sounded very much like Rashan Solaran. It was enough to make me think it was a son or grandson, but I later came to consider that it might have been the Rashan Solaran, the one from this world, Kyrus explained. He felt more at ease talking than thinking just then. The words spilled from him to the point where he had made himself short of breath.
You have already shown that there are means of traverse between this world and your own. While it may be mildly interesting to know how Rashan cleaned up his business in Tellurak prior to facing his possible demise against Lorimar, the only useful pinch of knowledge was known to you, Zizek said,
waving a hand about as if brushing aside Kyrus's insight. Well, what then? You must know something of use. You reacted when I mentioned the book about Talax. What do you know of it? Kyrus asked. The thing seemed to be a walking historical archive.
Perhaps not as much as you might hope. I have never read the work, though I am sure I have a copy of it. I make a habit of reading all that I can, but I make certain exceptions. Talax and I were... contemporaries, let us say.
Zizek shrugged and grinned sheepishly, an almost comical gesture by a creature with such a malevolent appearance. You knew him then? Kyrus asked.
I would have liked to have thought we were rivals, but he never considered me one. If he was nothing else, Talax was the most powerful mortal thing I have ever seen or hope to see. He kept the world at peace as a wolf keeps the peace of his pack. He was the strongest, and struck down any who quarreled with more than words. If Iliardra left that book for you, I would surmise that she envisions you returning Vaedris to peace in much the same way.
Could I? You knew him. Was Talax so much more powerful than me? I have often wondered if I could confront Roshan directly. My strength against his, Kyrus said. Unable to contain his thoughts within his idle body, he sprang to his feet. He paced behind the chair in which he had sat, turning to the demon once more as he paused to lean across its back. If you were to gamble, whose side would you lay coin on?
Ha! That right there is a question your warlock might ask. I rarely gamble, but allow me a brief story about one time that I did. A mortal acquaintance once challenged me to a game of chess. I told him that he could never defeat me. I wagered half my kingdom against all that he owned. He was an opponent of unsurpassed reputation. I allowed him the white pieces, and he made the first move. I never touched a single piece of mine. The man died 47 winters later, and in all that time the board remained undisturbed in my library. His assets were passed to me instead of his heirs. That is how I gamble, Zizek said.
A clever story, but I posed a hypothetical. Ignore the gambling premise if you must, but I would like an answer. If you would see Roshan dead, tell me whether my plan bears merit.
Kyrus's eyes darted about the room, looking for signs of water kept on hand, or wine even.
There is a weapon that, if it is brought to bear against you, will ensure Roshan's victory. The question is whether he has the willpower to wield it, Zizek said.
Something in his manner seemed at odds. The corners of the demon's mouth almost seemed to smile between words, but when he stopped, the hint of it was gone.
What weapon?
Patience, Zizek said, giving a long laugh. The same weapon I used in my game of chess. It was that same weapon that we used to slay Talax.
You just waited. You waited for Talax to die of old age? Kyrus asked. That hardly counts as slaying. And what if Roshan were to leave me in peace for all of my days? I would consider that well worth the peace that would come in the meantime.
It is a matter of perspective. A subtle poisoner might wait seasons for his fatal ministrations to take effect. Dead is dead, though. And if we immortals preferred our poison to be Talax's own gaudy, leaking source, then so be it. They wrote legends of that source of his, but in the end it killed him, same as yours will one day kill you, mortal.
Zizek slumped in his chair, almost as if retreating from Kyrus as he pointed an accusing finger.
Then what help are you? You suggest that Roshan might wait for my own eventual death by extreme age.
No!
Zizek shouted, leaping to his feet. Kyrus drew in ether by instinct. Zizek's must have sensed it. The demon could hardly have helped but notice, because he shrank back immediately.
No!
Zizek repeated in a more measured voice, still gravelly and inhuman, but quieter.
I expect that he will not be able to. It is the same sickness of mind that violated the condition of his return to the Immortals' Enclave. It is the same madness you must see each time he talks of slaughter, the glee in his eyes at the very thought of murder.
What then? What advice do you have? Kyrus asked.
You must not allow him to kill you. If he has the patience in him to do it, you must not allow him to wait for you to die. A strong sorcerer might see 100 summers. With that source you boast of, you might see 200 or more. We immortals see time on a longer chain. Whether you die tomorrow or 200 winters hence, if Roshan steps his boot upon your corpse, he has won. That is my advice. Force the battle.
You think I can win, then?
I think that you cannot win if you do not fight him, Zizek replied.
There's one other matter that sticks in my mind. When I arrived in this world and Roshan found me, he seemed perplexed at how I might have gotten from one world to the other. If he was the one who killed his twin in my world, Then how did he make the journey? Kyrus asked. It was a question that was jumping about in his mind as it awaited its turn to speak. He had worried that he might not work it into his conversation with the demon, so he chose instead to wedge it in artlessly.
Winds forbid. If Zizix thinks poorly of me socially, he might never invite me for tea again.
By some other means, then. There were other ways. Once there were many, but thanks to Talax, there are not so many avenues between worlds, Zizix said.
His lips curled in a sneer and stayed that way.
Talax closed the ways? Kyrus guessed. Maybe I could open them once more.
No, he used them too liberally, and the gods felt the need to act. They worried for the havoc he caused in his time as an Exmundiate, a wayfarer between worlds. I think they might have been personally afraid of him, though I suspect they were still above him. I used to speak with the gods of old and think of them as friends. We immortals were creatures they understood a bit better than the crazed, frantic mortals. It vexed them to think of the ruin a sorcerer of Talax's power could cause in worlds of lesser magic. They are the ones who cleaved the worlds loose. I know not how many are even left, but Talax was marooned here with us. For all his wanderings, he never discovered the secret to immortality. Power alone was not enough to achieve it.
Zizix turned his back on Kyrus.
You have brought sour memories to me this evening, mortal. So many old friends that rotten bastard Talax cost me. I shall need to find some diversion to put my mind some other place. You may go now. I would trouble you not to return. Consider it a compliment that I find your mere presence a danger to my children.
If I might, one final word before I go, Kyrus begged. Zizix turned, regarding him over a shoulder. You never gave your insight into that passage from Rashan's Journal of Prophecy. I have not forgotten.
Zizix smiled very slowly.
Of course you have not, but I can wield that weapon that Rashan has such difficulty with. Good evening, Sorcerer Kyrus.
Good evening, then. A moment later, Kyrus chased the startled Zizix from the room with the force of his draw, and departed back into the ether. Kyrus emerged from the ether in his palace chambers, warded tight against intrusion. It was empty and quiet, but he felt it all the more knowing that there would be no Juliana, no Celia, not even anyone about with a strong enough source to rap upon his chamber door save Fenris, and Rashan should the demon return. He ought to have been tired, but his mind had pushed past exhaustion and into mania.
I could just leave all this to Brannis to chew on.
Kyrus shook his head. He went to the bedside water pitcher and drank from it directly.
I wonder if Zizix kept no water on hand to keep my visit short.
He sighed and drank another long swallow.
He knew Talax. He knew Rashan. He knew everything? Certainly more than he let on. What secret is so valuable that he would keep it at the expense of Rashan's continued life? Either he thinks I can manage without it, or he fears me knowing it more than he fears Rashan.
Kyrus rubbed at his eyes and collapsed onto his bed. The lucidity brought on by ether coursing through him had faded.
The last parting barb. Did he reveal something by it? Is not knowing the answer to that prophecy going to lead to my doom? Killed by patience?
There were many more questions that Kyrus needed to work through. He stared up at the ornate ceiling of his chambers. The softness of the blankets and pillows felt so welcome beneath him. It was Brannis's problem, at least for a while.